Well, come on now. Comedy Film Nerds, Ep 454.
We're here. We're ready to go.
We're a quarter of the way to Ep 1816.
We'll get there.
I can't wait. 1816, yeah. That's going to be amazing.
We got a lot of movies to talk about, too.
We do.
We're going to be talking about Cold Pursuit, Remastered, The Two Killings of Sam Cooke. And we're going to revisit Green Book and Vice.
Oh, looks like we're getting into some Oscar-y business.
We are, and I kind of like the fact that we, like, as we see all these Oscar movies, we kind of re-talk about them a little bit and go a little more in depth, because then that kind of leads us up to the big Doug Benson episode
next week,
when we go over all the nominees, including the ones that will no longer be televised. The Oscars just came out and said that they're eliminating televising some of the awards now, and they're the ones that
have no celebrities.
They're the ones that are important to people who actually watch film, but it's cinematography, editing, and live short film will no longer be. Yeah, you can.
Okay, I'm going to take issue with that.
Yes.
That's not what they said they'd do. Mm-hmm. What they said they'd do is they were going to record them during the commercials, edit them down, and then show them during the live broadcast.
Only the acceptance speeches.
As edited. No, even the nominations, just edited down. And I thought, you know, cinematography, editing are amongst the most boring acceptance speeches anyway. But I think they should do it with the whole show. I think, honestly, they should take the entire show. All that walking time from the audience to the thing, all the fumfering at the microphone. I don't know. I didn't expect this. Cut it all out and just show like the Lady Gaga singing a song and then 5 minutes of people saying thank you to their moms, and that's it.
You know, our guest has a point. Let's see a completely edited version of the show.
Well, two things. One, introduce our guest to let everyone know. And two, in 454 episodes, the first time we've ever heard fumfering.
Yes.
On the show, and I applaud you, sir, for bringing fumfering into the studio.
I think it will be now a trending hashtag. Yeah, fumfering.
I'm going to pound you hashtag fumfering right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, a first-time guest, someone I've known for a very, very long time, a former comedian, improv actor, showrunner, writer, director, and producer, ladies and gentlemen, Jay Kogan.
An anti-fumferist.
An anti-fumferist.
Well, I mean, you're going to put on a show, put on a show. That's how I feel. And the Oscars has been routinely boring. And don't we, I don't know if you do, I DVR the Oscars, and then I zip through it. Like, I do my own editing.
We live tweet.
We live tweet
thing.
And watch.
You poor bastard.
And by the end, exhausted.
We're exhausted because all we're doing, well, I mean, the frumfering gives us time to write jokes while...
Have a snack.
I don't know if you saw the Grammys, but the worst speeches of all time were on the great, great Grammy show. Fabulous. Mm-hmm. Music number after music number. And then every now and then they had to give out an award. Mm-hmm. And somebody would come to the microphone and say, I don't know. I don't know. And then music would start to play and they wouldn't get to say whatever they were going to say. And it was done. Mm-hmm. The awards are the worst parts.
Maybe there's like an unwritten rule at the Grammys because, you know, you're a musician. You have to be cool. You have to make sure you have no prepared speeches before you go up.
Yeah. What category last year was the guy who proposed to his girlfriend?
In the Grammys?
No, in the Oscars. Didn't a guy win an Oscar, or was it the Emmys, who then brought his fiancée?
That was the Emmys, I think.
Oh, the Emmys. Okay, that was worthwhile. See, I'm saying, if you do something like that, you're making it worthwhile. You have to do something worthwhile. If you win a damn award, do something worthwhile. Tell a joke, be funny, be entertaining.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Very frustrating.
Or give some heartfelt speech or something that
raise awareness on something.
Raise awareness, I'm fine. Or like a couple years ago when the Oscars brought the regular folks in and who's your favorite actor? That man right there. And she points at Denzel. I'm like, that was it. I watched.
That was fun.
That was fun. Yeah. I'll watch that.
It was a good bit.
But, all right.
Ready to get into it,
Dan? I am ready to get into it. Mm-hmm.
We got a lot to discuss today.
Yeah.
We're going to start with Cold Pursuit with Liam Neeson.
All right. So we're going to do a spoiler rep on this.
Yes.
Because
there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah. This is a remake of an original, which is Order of Disappearance. It came out in 2014. It is now streaming on Netflix. And I want to watch that because I bet you that is interesting, like the first part of this movie.
Right.
Because the second half, God, does it get stupid.
Well, what's interesting.
I gave this so much slack.
I know.
I was like, it's taken on ice.
Yeah. Taken on a snowplow.
Taken on a snowplow. Mm. Fine. I was expecting. And the thing was, they tricked me because I was expecting, as we joked about, the first couple minutes would have some what's an ex-Navy SEAL driving a snowplow? Right. You know, like there'd be some, you know, there was some like, all right, mm-hmm. that explains right. it. No, it is literally just a regular guy
right.
Who goes nuts when his son gets killed.
Right. Now, what's interesting, and this rarely happens, the director, Hans-Peter Moland, actually directed the original and this remake. So, you know, I don't know if it was some cultural differences that kind of made this movie go off the rails a little bit, but it was, it's very unusual to have a director kind of do both.
How thrilled, though, would Hans-Peter Moland, who directed sort of this small movie, be to have Liam Neeson now star in his next movie, and how upset must he have been when he heard Liam Neeson's press conference just before the premiere? Yeah. When he said, I'm going to try and attack. I've spent some time attacking black people.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. And I wanted to hear the air go out of the room of every PR person and studio executive that was in that press conference. Because it's like, this wasn't on the press. This wasn't supposed to be talked about in this press release.
He tried so hard to explain. No, you don't know what I meant. I mean, I had a friend who was attacked, so I went around the streets with a club in my hand looking for somebody to attack. You know.
Yes.
Like people do.
We've all done this.
Yeah, I mean.
What are you talking about?
It was the best clarification ever. Yeah. It's like, I said something horrible, but let me explain. What I really said was, oh, no, you just said the exact same thing. Yeah,
the Virginia governor gave him a little lesson on how to fix it.
Right, yeah.
Governor Northam.
It's amazing. Like, at some point, there had to be handlers going, look, maybe you should stop talking now. Maybe I don't think you're helping at this point.
Well, I think this might have been his last movie. As a result of the fact that the movie's not good and he said those horrible things.
Well, and also, too, it's like, it's such a weird place to reveal that. Like, you know, maybe set up some time at the Museum of Tolerance, maybe go in for an interview, and when you're promoting some snowplow movie, really? Is that the best time?
It'd be one thing if he was like, look, I got to this really dark place,
yeah,
and this is where I understood, I understood where hatred comes from, and ultimately I was like, well, this is awful, and this breeds this type of hatred. This is why anyone of any ethnicity who wants to strike out again. He could have used it as this like
a teachable moment.
A teachable moment of like, hey, let's have a big discussion about racism and from anyone. You know, like those guys that a couple years ago that shot those cops, they were black men, and they were they were angry, they were ex-military, they did this in Dallas, and it could have been like, hey, if we just let hatred take over, it's gonna really undo society.
Violence begets violence.
Violence begets violence. And I'm giving you a human example of somebody, right? Anyone could probably identify with that.
Right. Because it was a human, it was an emotional
thing. It was an emotional thing. A woman that was sexually assaulted by a man could feel like, I want to go kill all men. And a man was assaulted by a woman. Anyone could come up with that.
And I feel like we got the first half of the... Actually, in both
ways. In the worst place.
Yeah, so we got the first half of the film and the first half of his confession.
Yeah.
So everybody stopped at act two.
I'm feeling that there's nothing that Liam Neeson could have said that was going to engender peace in this world. I'm not sure. as optimistic as you are, Graham, about all that, I don't think it's going to happen with him.
No. Because he hasn't come to, it's not like he is at that place.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, whenever somebody says something crazy like that, you're like, okay, well, when's the next press conference when he says I misspoke and apologizes and, you know, realizes what he said? We never got that second one. He just kind of reiterated what he said the first time.
Yeah, see, I kind of like when, and then you're like, so is he still going around at night with the bat?
Yeah, no. It was a bad week. He said it was a bad week. Yeah. He's okay now. He's okay.
Yeah. So anyway, let's talk about the movie now. This movie, it was the trailer and the way it was kind of set up was like a comedic Taken. It was really like, okay, guy gets pushed too far, but he's a regular guy. And now we have all these extra jokes that we can put in, like he doesn't know how to strangle somebody. So he's strangling somebody, and this is in the trailer. And, you know, the guy gets back up because he didn't completely strangle him, and he's gasping for breath. So he has to kill him again. But it's never explained how he kind of goes from snowplow driver to cold-blooded killer. It just kind of happens in one scene. Like, it doesn't, we don't really get that progression at all. And then the movie, like, basically, I was expecting more of a kind of like a almost like a satire or parody of these movies with Liam Neeson in it. But we didn't get that. We got basically a Taken movie with some jokes in it, is really kind of what happened.
And the sense of humor initially I was like, okay, they're showing a little sense of humor. Mm-hmm. Someone would die and then there'd be that graphic would come up on stage. Right. And I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. But then it just goes off. It turns into this wacky mass murder romp.
Okay. I don't know, a murder com, you could call it. I'm not sure what you would call it, but it was weird. Like there were some funny moments at the beginning. I'm thinking, oh, this will be kind of a fun movie. You have the drug dealer who's bringing his son to school, and he's a vegan. So when one of the thugs puts a sweet in his lunch, he throws it out the window, and he turns to his son and goes, "I want you to know something. I had no hand in this." Moments like that are really funny. But then they're few and far between, and they don't go anywhere.
Casting of some of those, they could have cast the bad guy. I just thought the lead bad guy, man, he was so over the top, and some of it might not be his fault because it was a script issue, but also, what was resonating for me initially before the movie goes off the rails is I was like, well, this feels like they're trying to at least root it in some type of believability. Could any of us...
And winking to us saying that, this is, we know what these movies are like, but haha, we know you know.
Right, we know you know, and sort of we've all had...
But halfway through, we're going to forget that you know.
We're going to forget that you know, and then make it way too over the top. It was sort of initially like the relationship between him and his wife. Forgetting the actress's name, who's a really...
Laura Dern.
Laura Dern. I love
her. Who's in what, two scenes?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she disappears.
Well, when their son dies, they're... Which is believable that a married couple would... There'd be some blame of each other or whatever if that happened. You're like, oh, man. And she plays that really sincerely and earnestly. This is what a married couple would go through. Mm-hmm. And... I've heard of, there's this famous story, this regular guy whose daughter was raped and killed. And then he kills the guy. He ended up going to prison. But that thread of sincerity and believability keeps you in initially, at least kept me in initially of wow, anyone could, if somebody did this to somebody I cared about, wow, could I do that? That's always an interesting thing. Regular person goes nuts. And you ask yourself.
Well, he's not a regular person. He's a snowplow driver. So that stops that. I mean, those guys are all
loose cannons.
20 minutes away from being a murderer anyway. Yeah.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're all And so I came into this film, solo expectations, just Liam, go, take out the trash. They crossed the wrong guy. Mm. Fine. But then it just got so ridiculous. And so unbelievable, and then they didn't know the tone.
No.
My guess is since it's the same director, this happens. We've seen this happen where a director directs the foreign version, maybe in whatever that's their native culture or whatever, where it makes sense, and then Hollywood gets a hold of it and says, "Well, we gotta blah, blah, blah." And so they're like, "All right, I guess." This is what Americans want, is ridiculous, clown-like.
Like over the top.
Yeah, type, way over the top.
Humor. And it was, it didn't really know where it wanted to go at some point. But if it was all over the top, if it was a RoboCop kind of thing.
Sure.
Then you could say, okay, that makes sense. I get it from start to finish. But it went up and down, weird tone. And then there were whole segments where Liam Neeson isn't even in the movie. And we're like, well, if you have Liam Neeson star in the movie and he's on the poster, maybe you should have him in the movie more. It's a lot of rival gang stuff and what other secondary characters that you don't care about are doing. And then Liam Neeson shows up three or four scenes later. I'm like, oh, that's right, he's in this movie. So it had some weird, it made some weird choices.
And again, the initial rival gang stuff, I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Now we're getting started.
Here we go. And
Canadian drug lords versus indigenous drug lords.
Native American drug lords.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. Let's see. And is he gonna
at a ski resort?
At a ski resort. Okay. And then the two cops, the young cop that wants to solve all the crimes, the old guy that doesn't care.
I completely forgot about those characters. Again, extraneous characters that each have four scenes each.
That's the sort of European flair.
Yeah.
It's all those extraneous characters. Suddenly you like the European flair, but now you don't. I don't get you.
Yeah.
I get the movie. I don't get you guys.
Yeah. Maybe we're wrong.
Yeah.
We should have understood all of this extraneous nonsense.
Yes. We should be looking at through a Euro-American sensibility lens.
I guess Preston Sturges is an idiot, too.
Yeah.
Right. I get it, guys.
Yeah. Well, he's not perfect.
All right. We'll talk about it more in the spoiler. I can't even.
And so let's talk about Remastered, the two killings of Sam Cooke. Now, you saw this. This is a streaming movie.
This is a streaming doc. And
now, I don't actually know that much about Sam Cooke. So.
Neither did I. Mm-hmm. And this is why this movie does a really excellent job. Mm-hmm. If you were to ask me a minute before I started watching this movie what I knew about Sam Cooke, I'd go, oh, I like his music. I wouldn't have known if he was alive or dead.
Really?
I would have just been like, oh, yeah, I like his... I don't know. I guess he's not alive because he hasn't done anything recently. Would just be my sort of logical...
Right. Since he was shot in the early 1960s. Yeah. Since then.
Yeah. He hasn't released a song.
Sure. I don't know what happened to him.
But I literally had no idea. And so...
Doesn't Pepsi have a hologram of him somewhere?
Probably, right? Didn't he perform at the Super Bowl? Yeah. I don't know. And so they go into it, and man, what it does that thing that a good documentary does, and this is the thing Netflix, I think, has been doing so well is their documentary series. They're getting really good documentarians to find really interesting subject matter. And again, they did a nice mix of present day interviews with people that knew him back then and archival photos and footage and stuff like that, which is great. You know, the old like black and white TV shows where that's really plays well, I think, in terms of telling the story to the nice, you know, 4K interview footage. And it's, I didn't know. I mean, the guy, you know, started as a gospel singer. Mm-hmm. And in the gospel world, it was like, if you do the rock and roll, that's the devil's music, you're shunned. And he had to really he was nervous about doing it because he had a nice gospel career. I didn't know. He had a really good gospel career.
He was a huge gospel singer. And I have some of his gospel records. They're great. Like, his voice is great. Mm-hmm. Silky smooth and wonderful. And then he started doing pop records. And yes, that when you cross over, you are deemed unworthy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The gospel community says, you're out.
Yeah, forget it.
And... so that, and then his sort of transformation into, you know, he meets Muhammad Ali, right? When Ali is Cassius Clay and then joins the Nation of Islam and changes his name from Clay to Muhammad Ali. And Sam Cooke's like, oh, wow. And he meets Malcolm X and starts realizing, wait a minute, you know, this isn't right. At the same time, in a parallel, you know, while he's expanding his worldview and everything, he also expands his view in terms of business and says, why do the record labels own all of our music? Starts his own label where it's like, no, the artists own it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the record business, I don't know if it's still true today, but back then, a lot of mobsters ran it, a lot of...
Oh, the record business is on the up and up, believe me.
They're so on it.
Yes, there's nothing but clean money in the record business. Everywhere you go.
So... and you're seeing, and back then it's like payola. I mean, all of that, and
yeah, back then.
Back today, it's
no. Again, you know, clean.
Big corporations never do anything nefarious for profits, especially now. No. Thank God, there's a corporate takeover of our society.
As long as there's a corporate accountant, you have nothing to worry about. Yeah.
They've never exploited anybody. Not today. No. Only back then.
But in the documentary, do they make the case that he was murdered because of this?
They raise that question. Yeah. They really go, wait a minute, you know, and they go into that and they interview people that were around the time and they're like, this woman, you know, who he just hung out with and she was a prostitute and she was working for this guy, this woman at this hotel where they, you know, they've rolled Johns. They, you know what I mean? She'll bring and go back to a guy's hotel room and then throw his wallet out the, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so it was like, and wasn't investigated by the cops because the police in LAPD at the time, very racist and just like, these are just, you know, black people committing crimes. There's nothing real here. And they raised that question of like, why wasn't this investigated more? Mm-hmm. And you know, there were some business dealings, you know, that rubbed some people the wrong way. You know, like there's a lot of like, wait a minute type of questions. And great interviews like with, you know, Jim Brown, who was part of that. And, you know, Jim Brown said Sam Cooke realized, you know, he could have. And even when he became a pop star, he was making pop music. And then he wanted to start doing songs that were like Change Is Gonna Come as his song. That's a mm-hmm. civil rights song. Yep. And then the pop record people were like, easy on the civil rights. Just be a pop singer. Mm-hmm. Don't make waves. And which still happens today. Anyone, comedians, actors today, if you bring up the wrong stuff, they're like, nope.
Yeah. That's now America is doing that.
Right.
Instead of the censors or the people, America itself is saying, well, you don't want to hear anything we don't want to hear.
Twitter's become a gatekeeper.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, look at it. Look at Twitter and Facebook are deeming who gets to have First Amendment rights and who doesn't.
Right.
And if you call out the, you know, corporate war machine of the American empire, you can pick a side. You can be, a Republican or Democrat, and you can be argumentative that way. But if you call out the actual people that are really running things, So it was just a micro version of that. And he had to make a choice. I want to be more socially aware. And Jim Brown goes, he was doing the thing that I was doing too. He's like, scoring touchdowns or hit records wasn't enough for me. I wanted to get there's all these things. Cause he did the Chitlin circuit, mm-hmm. you know, and we're going to talk about Green Book in a little bit, but he had mm-hmm. to do that. Like couldn't stay in the whites only hotels.
He probably used the Green Book.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, he did. And, mm-hmm. and he was in the South as a young artist going, wait a minute, this ain't right. Mm-hmm. And then he started,
you see it in the Ray Charles movie, too.
Yes.
Yeah, where he said, I'm not performing in Georgia. And he was banned from Georgia. Mm-hmm. And they finally, in the 90s, like, mm-hmm. recognized him, the yeah. state of Georgia. And so a lot of those artists were really, like, waking up to this fact. And so was he. And so it's a really fascinating documentary. Mm-hmm. If you're a fan of Sam Cooke, I think you really like it. If you're like me, who you're just like, oh, I know a handful of his songs. They were nice, but I didn't know much else about the guy. Man, mm-hmm. it's a great doc.
Did you come away liking his music more?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, that song, Change Is Gonna Come, I always figured it was a civil rights mm-hmm. era song, but right. you really, oh.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful, and they show in the interviews of people today, whatever, this was shot a couple years ago, but modern day friends and family members listening to that song again today, everyone's just like, oh man. Like, they're all hit with the emotions of that song, mm-hmm. you know, because he wrote it like Medgar Evers and all that stuff had just happened, you know, and a lot of artists were doing this. Like, John Coltrane did that song Alabama after that church was burnt down that killed those young black girls in Alabama, and he wrote that. And everyone was like, what? We got to do something. And so it does what a good doc does. It, mm-hmm. it brings you into a world or a person and a place in history that you might not have known that much about, and really right. expands the view of it. And it makes me like Sam Cooke's music 10 times more.
Very cool. Well, this is actually a good segue to go into Green Book.
Okay.
So now this movie, I had a chance to see. We've talked about it a number of times. And it's interesting, when I saw it, I kept thinking of like what you were saying before, where you did a little research on the actual story between these two guys.
And after I'd seen it.
After you'd seen it. And how, you know, the relationship wasn't as Hollywooded up as it really was. But what's interesting, too, because this is not a spoiler, but at the end, you know, they show cards with the real people and all those things. Like, you had said, too, that you had researched and that, you know, they weren't great friends, and he got fired because he was a racist and all those things. And then, you know, at the end of the movie, there's a card of, like, you know, they've been friends until their deaths. So both of those things can't be true. So, you know, maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle. I don't know. But
one of the executive producers or the writers is the son of the guy who was the driver. In the credits, mm-hmm. so it's at least I think there are two competing stories. One is from the white guy's perspective, and one is from the black guy's perspective. Those perspectives are quite different.
Yes.
And the piano playing, his family said, no, they were not friends. Mm-hmm. And they
never contacted us. Their family says they never contacted us.
Right. And it was not estranged from his brother. All the things that are complained, mm-hmm. the hole in his heart that they make in the movie about he's alone and he's estranged. The family of the black pianist said that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So there's I also was on my guard when the movie starts, because often the ties based on a true story, I'm like, okay, they're going to take some liberties. But when it starts inspired by a true story, you know that there's a lot of things that aren't gelling with reality. But I will say this, and I was watching this movie, and as I'm watching it, that was kind of in the back of my head, and I was thinking, like, there's something off about the movie, but I'm still liking it, so I'm not sure what it was. And then I finally figured out at the end, and this is why. The movie itself, narratively and story-wise, really felt like a contrived confection. It really felt that way, where everything just kind of like, well, this is like the Hollywood version. If this were a fictional story, what this would look like. But the thing that won me over were the performances. I thought the performances of both Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali, I thought they were so good, and they were real. It transcended the
Hollywood
kind of
white guilt.
I was going to say that and the flaws in the contrived writing of the actual script, but even the directing too. Like it was okay, but. Really, the strength of that film was the two performances, because you could tell, even if the mechanisms and the kind of world around them felt a little contrived and Hollywood polished, both those actors were digging into something real for those performances, and that's what elevated the movie, I think, to where it is. Like if any other actors, it would have just felt
actors.
Like, yeah,
they're
it would have felt like meh, it would have been meh.
They're two great actors that are. You know, they were given a script, they were cast in it, and they did their best job, and they did an amazing job. And and the competing stories we talked about, and the lack of research or whatever, and the sort of Hollywood has to give this version. You know, it is a testament to how good their performances are, because if even one of them was not that good of an actor, it would have really...
It would have hamstrung the movie.
Well, and to be fair, if they did make a movie about a sort of white racist driver driving a black guy who got fired for being a racist, that's the end of the movie. There's no, there's nothing more there.
It'd be a 10-minute short film.
Sure, yeah. having them bond and become friends and lifelong friends. Well, that's a much better movie.
Sure,
right.
Yeah. Sure.
It is. So that was the kind of thing I think that. Knowing all that going in, and the performances kind of made me forgive all of those. Issues and flaws of the actual storytelling, because the actors themselves dug into something real, so it made me like the movie more.
Yeah, we talk about this a lot every Oscar year. There's a lot of movies that come forward where they get Oscar buzz or even nominations in this case, where the strength of a couple of performances carries the flaws.
It elevates
it,
yeah.
You know, and this is one of those films.
It's also the subject matter. It's the moment. You know, racism is hot and high and in everybody's mind, except Liam Neeson, apparently.
Yeah.
And so
he's thinking about it just in the wrong way.
Wrong way. So, I mean, that's also a
matter. No, it's in his mind, absolutely.
So, I don't know. You know, I think it's the where it is. And I think, while I agree with you, I think those performances are by far the quality of performances outweigh the quality of the rest of the movie. Mm-hmm. It was a subdued movie, you know, considering a Farrelly brother directed this movie.
Yes.
You know,
this is something about Mary directing.
Right. It stayed grounded and stayed real-ish. Mm-hmm. You know, some of it's a little bit Miracle on 34th Street, but a lot of it is actually, you know, has a verisimilitude that you can buy at the very least.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, like, it is... So he directed these two highly skilled actors in this very subdued, these very subdued performances with all of these nuances and character arcs. So just that as a directing job, hats off to the guy that's done wacky comedies his whole life.
Right.
You know, like I give him credit for that. Mm. I just, you know, we talk about this a lot. I just, when Hollywood, you know, has to do this or whitewash or just make it more Hollywoody. It's like
Hollywood polish.
Yeah, you know, in real life, the Death Star did not blow up at the end of.
Yeah, there's always a rewrite in space. So, and the other movie was we want to talk about a little bit was Vice, because I finally had a chance to get to see it. Now, this was the kind of movie that you talked about before. I kind of had the same reaction you did on this movie. I think I appreciated it more than I liked it. Like, I kind of put this in the same category as W, that Oliver Stone movie. It really felt like that kind of thing where it's, well, all right, we're putting great actors in wigs and makeup, and then we're just having them recreate press footage that we've already seen and hearing them say things that we've already heard and events that we're already all too familiar with. Like there wasn't a ton of insight, new information, nuance, like analysis, any of those things. And I say that because specifically when Adam McKay did The Big Short, all of those things were in that movie. Mm-hmm. Like I got a nuanced story. I got information that I didn't have before. I got insight that I didn't know. And I got great performances from actors, from real life people that I didn't know existed or were there that were actually architects of all these things that happened. So I felt like this was, this didn't compel me as much as like Big Short did, only because, like, you know, I'm watching Christian Bale dressed as, you know, Dick Cheney gain weight for the performance and makeup, but like, oh, I remember him saying that. I remember that press release. I'm like, I feel like I'm just watching like an A&E recreation. So it, you know, it didn't really resonate with me as much.
What did you think of it, Jay?
I hated it, I must say, for that very reason. I felt like, yeah, I did not like Dick Cheney as a vice president of the United States, nor did I like the president he served under. That wasn't my cup of tea. But I completely agree that if you're going to make a movie about Dick Cheney, who is a hated character by half of the country, you need to bring something more to it. You need to explain what is his reason for being, or what more didn't we know that we should have known about him, or what other insight are you going to provide, or what other piece of the story that makes it make sense, or more evil, or more insidious, or darker, or funnier, or smarter, or more human.
Or humanized, yeah. Even anything.
Anything. Yeah. There's nothing about it. And I was so
because that's
upset.
What W did, too.
Because I agree, but yeah. But that was less watchable. W was a more hodgepodge mess of a movie. This was sort of narratively understood, but was dull. Mm-hmm. And the way that Adam McKay is a brilliant guy. He's really smart, and he's very insightful. And he makes really smart, funny movies, and he also makes interesting, serious movies, like you said, for the Big Short. This was nothing. This was a large exercise in just I'm gonna crap on Dick Cheney. Well, it's over for Dick Cheney. Mm-hmm. He had his day, and there's no reason for it at this point.
You bring up a great point, which is so the Big Short shows how the system that allowed this to happen. Now it's showing this handful of people who discovered it, and then they profited from betting against it. My one critique of The Big Short is they shouldn't have been looked at as heroes. They're just they're just a different type of parasite within a broken system. But that's the nuance and the insight that he did bring into Big Short is show all of us who don't understand finance and Wall Street and mortgages what system created this. And to me, it was like, what system allowed a guy like Dick Cheney and Bush to just come in and circumvent? Well, we're in a country that has.
You didn't really see that.
We didn't see that at all. I mean, like, there's no mention of like a president hasn't gotten congressional approval for war since World War II. Like, Cheney and Bush, awful, don't like them, but this has been happening for decades of corporations and the war machine and all this stuff, the stuff that that Eisenhower warned us against, the military industrial. He coined that term. So that was the thing, like at the end of Big Short, he did a good job that in a comedic way, well, everyone got arrested and this reform and this will never happen again. And then goes, what? Actually, no, none of that happened.
And he played that card again in this movie at the middle. Yeah. So I'm like, well, no, we've already seen that bit.
Right. I'm not even failing the joke. Just the point of it. Exactly. The Big Short explained some things to me that I did not know.
Right.
Nothing about Cheney told me anything I didn't know, except it kind of presupposes that at some point Dick Cheney had no particular point of view politically. He just randomly picked, I'll follow that guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then he goes for it. But so I guess that's that shows how empty his soul is. So there's that little bit, but nothing more.
But DC and American politics are littered with those guys. Mm-hmm. And show me that. Show me how, you know, these guys who have no ideology at all just go where and who's fueling it. You know, like no talk of the American war machine that allows this, the defense contractors that lobby the politicians. I mean, no, nothing.
Oh, hold on. I own Raytheon, so I'm not going to sit here and listen to you badmouth my company.
Right. Exactly. Like, why is Boeing and Raytheon buying ad time on MSNBC and all this stuff?
Why is there red light on your shirt?
Yeah, exactly. Like
Sniper.
That's the thing I would have liked too out of Vice. Mm-hmm. You bring up great points where it was just like, yeah, Christian Bale's a good actor. And there was a couple scenes in there where I was like, oh.
It was a pile of haircuts.
But there's a couple scenes in there where you go, oh, Adam McKay's showing us what probably was said inside that room at that key moment that we never got access to. That's one area of a historical drama where you're just sort of going, it probably was like this on a human level, and there's some questions and stuff. But for the most part, it was like he could have really unpacked the corruption of our government the way he unpacked the corruption of our financial banking system. Mm-hmm. And he didn't.
Right.
And you're right. He's a really fun, he's a brilliant director. He's really good at comedy, and Big Short was like, wow.
Yeah, and I'm a little angry to talk about the machine that promotes movies like Vice to become Academy Award nominated movies, because we talked about the thread, the Phantom Thread. It's the same thing last year, which is like
autopilot.
No, you know, just automatically, just because you like this director and he's smart, does he get a pass every time? No. Vice didn't seem like it's an Academy Award level movie, and it shouldn't. Mm-mm. Not the first time a movie like that has been nominated, as we say every year this bunch, but it's like, it's not right, because I think it's The Emperor's New Clothes. It's sort of just, he did it, must be good. Paul Thomas Anderson made it. It must be good.
Must be good. Here's this other director that's done good stuff.
I said the same thing about The Favorite. I said the same thing with The Favorite.
Every year there's that Accents and Gown movie, or there's a good-looking A-lister puts on weight and looks ugly, doing a historical thing. This must be great.
Technically, he could also lose weight, The Machinist.
Sure. So.
Did Charlize Theron get nominated for her transformation? Not Charlize Theron, Nicole Kidman. For Destroyer?
She did not.
Oh, she changed her look completely.
Yeah.
What about that makeup artist? We didn't do something right. Was she?
You know, and the one place I think she did get snubbed was Boy Erased. She had a great supporting role in that. And, and then the two people from, The Favorite kind of took those two slots when they're actually the lead. So even if you did like the movie, they're still in the wrong category.
Right. All right.
All right. That was some nice revisiting.
We're going to just say it real quick before we get into it. So we could all agree a little bit of a down year for Oscar movies?
For sure. You know, the more I see, the more I agree with that.
Because there was a couple years ago, when the year that Spotlight won, I remember there was
solid
10 to 12 movies that you went, wow.
I think the most solid picture category is animated features this year. I looked at that list, I'm like, these are all good movies, with the exception of the one I can't see. It's the Japanese one that is literally nowhere. You can't find streaming, can't buy. It's like, you know, if you have some art house movie in the middle of your city, it might be playing once at 1:30 on a Sunday. But other than that, you will never find it. Other than that, you will never find it.
Above a vinyl record
again,
store.
You know, you want more people to watch your awards show. Hey, how about let people see the movies before? That would also help as well.
And select movies that...
Not everyone has screeners, and even then, screeners, you don't get the animated movies a lot of times either.
And how many people want to watch The Favorite?
Yeah.
I saw it. I watched it. I watched the screener.
Or The Wife.
Yeah.
I didn't watch that, no. But I will.
I tried to. Yeah.
So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about Patreon for a moment.
How about it?
I want to let you guys know, we want a lot of you to become members. So we're going to be actually redoing our Patreon structure in the next couple of weeks. We will keep you posted and informed. And if you have any suggestions for that, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at info@comedyfilmnerds.com. I'm also going to start a message boards thread on just the Patreon members to see what you guys want, what you like, what you want to see changed. And we're going to redo that.
Yeah, maybe there's something...
that we're missing. Yeah,
yeah. Maybe you guys like want. You know, if you guys did this, I'd be willing to spend money to do that. You know, right. we're cleaning up. We're taking away. We had too many tears.
Right.
And you know, we just whatever you guys like or get more access to.
We're going to relaunch it.
Yeah.
And we've got some ideas, and we're going to put everything into effect within the next couple of weeks. And we got rid of some tiers. We might be changing some tiers, and we'll get you guys on board with the Patreon. But the one thing that's not going away, Graham, is the Patreon ad tier.
Oh, how about it?
Yeah, we have some great Patreon sponsors, and we're going to go through them right now.
How about
for $50, you get your product mentioned every single episode.
The best marketing value on the internet.
Johnny Roiland's promoting his novel.
Other than making a sex video.
Yes. Either one makes money. What does it matter?
Can you promote your sex video on Patreon?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
So win-win.
Yeah. Yeah.
Check out Jay's sex video that he's... Yes.
A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. And it's available on Amazon in both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com. happyhorrorshowproductions.com.
And that's Johnny Roiland?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That is Johnny Roiland.
I interrupted it, so I want to
say
Johnny
Roiland. Correct.
And it's an Audacity Performing Arts Project. Produces after-school performing arts projects in poor, underfunded, and low-performing schools. Performing arts education is not a luxury. Please visit them at audacityperformingarts.com. Audacityperformingarts.com.
It's not a luxury. We need it.
Yeah. And Chris Parker Howard, his podcast, Coffee Over Suicide. It's about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. Get caught up on season one now before season two premieres this month, wherever podcasts are found, and find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com.
Now, to be fair, since that's a coffee podcast, we now have someone that, Alice Frazier, that does a tea podcast.
Yes.
Just we want
to... You know, equal time.
Equal time.
It's the fairness doctrine, isn't it?
It is. It is. As a tea drinker, Chris is a coffee drinker. We want to be
fair. No, I drink tea too.
Oh, good. Yeah. Fuck those coffee people. They're weirdos. But we do love Coffee Over Suicide. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast, host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. The recorded back-to-back is a three-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience, so listen to it with headphones. AliceFrazier.com, that's AliceFrazier.com. And our pal Rebecca Evans, the art podcast. When we move past hesitation, we're true to ourselves, we find our own art in life. You want to hear some fun stories and get inspired? Check out the art at facebook.com/theartpodcasts.
Art.
Podcast. And last but not least, La Calavera by Alan Ross. The story of a pirate radio operator who decides to get into the pirate cable TV business. Darren Loney, together with a group of misfits and the questionable guidance of a spiritual advisor in the form of Richard Nixon, gear up to take on the world's largest media conglomerate and its egomaniacal celebrity CEO. It's on Amazon in ebook and hard copy.
I want
you started it, right?
Alan sent us a copy. Thank you so much. And I just started reading it. I'm about 20, 30 pages in, and it's a cool read. I like it.
Oh, great.
I'll give you more updates as I get through it. I read it every morning a little bit. Right before I make myself green tea.
Yes. And a smoothie?
And a smoothie after I work out.
Chris. Okay.
I don't eat. That'd be weird to go those two temperature extremes in each fist.
Yeah, yeah. You know, hot and cold. I want to see which one's going to win.
Ice cream and soup. Who wants it?
I read a few pages as part of my sex tape.
Yes.
So I read some pages, then I do the sex tape, and then back and forth.
Check out Jay Kogan's sex tape, everybody. That's the new Patreon level.
Yep.
The sex tape level.
We got some trailers.
Oh, let's dial
now,
them up here.
And this one, these we have to talk about now. Aladdin, granted, we only really need to see the end of it, but we'll check out the new Aladdin trailer, live action with Will Smith.
Okay. So this is...
This follows the unnecessary trend of all Disney animated movies being made into live action remakes.
Yeah, why is that? You have this movie. It's made.
Yeah. Why do we need a shot-by-shot remake?
Trailer for the trailer.
So already it sounds like the score is the same.
Bring me the lamp. Your life begins now. Aladdin.
It's kind of like a YouTube video, like a fan-made YouTube video.
computer animated anyway.
Right? Yeah, yeah. All right, more green screen. Great. Here we go. The money shot, sort of.
You really don't know who I am. Genie, wishes, lamp, none of that ringing a bell.
Oh, my God. So it's pretty much just Will Smith Blue as the genie.
Yeah, but I mean, again...
with some Bollywood actors to break into the India market.
Yeah.
These so-called live-action movies are not live-action movies. They're, again, CG animated enhanced movies.
Yes.
That if you're Walt Disney Company, you've already made that other movie and you're making it, just re-release Aladdin.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Save yourself $200 million.
Yeah. Wouldn't you?
It worked with Lion King. That Lion King re-release made $100 million.
And wouldn't you, as somebody, and one of the things that was so brilliant is like you saw Lion, you know, people who like have small children. Oh, well, I'm going to show them this on the big screen now. I saw it 20 years ago. So let's bring it. Wouldn't you do that? Yeah. Like,
I guess the thought is if you do an update, you are protecting the property of the thing that you own, except the fact that it's public domain. That a lot of these stories are completely public domain.
Yes.
You're not really protecting the property.
Mm-hmm.
Also directed by Guy Ritchie.
Wow. That's right, really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I forgot about that.
This new Pet Sematary one that came out
five days ago. Yeah, this is it. Now.
It had a Sherlock Holmes feel to it, so.
Yeah. Okay. So now the great thing is we don't have to see the movie now. Because this trailer literally goes through the entire thing.
L.A. discovered a charming little landmark.
So the girl discovers the Pet Sematary.
The Pet Sematary.
Okay, first 20 minutes of the film.
Place to bury our pets and remember them. Well, it seems scary, but it's not. Perfectly natural. Just like dying is natural.
The whole town's been using this place for generations. Folks make a kind of ritual out of it.
Nice creepy setup.
It's not some campfire story.
Saw these in the trees up there.
They're warnings. The local tribes carved them before they fled.
Set up ancient Indian burial ground. Place.
On it.
Mm-hmm.
There's something up there.
Yeah, something evil.
Something that dates way back.
Something no one should go to in the middle of the night.
Those woods belong
with
to
fog.
Something else. Something.
That cat was dead.
It brings things back.
Cheers.
Now the trailer should end here. But okay, the
I
cat
know what
came
you're
back.
Thinking of doing.
He lost his son or daughter.
But they don't come back.
Daughter dies.
Now he's going to bring her back.
Daddy.
We're at least an hour and a half into
What's
the film
going
now.
On?
Hug your daughter. I should never have shown you that place. Yeah, your child is not the only thing that will come back. The barrier is broken.
Okay, now we're going to show you the rest of the
movie.
We have a second chance.
Yeah, there's a lot of creepy stuff in here that would have been great to be surprised by when you're in the theater.
Oh, wow. So John Lithgow dies.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. He may have just been hobbled.
Yeah.
Good point. So, good point. My fault.
Yeah. So, and the, you know, if you're interested in seeing this movie, I'm telling everyone right now, just see the first trailer because that kind of set everything up.
The first trailer did a great job of like, oh, wow, remaking. This could be an interesting remake.
Yeah.
This trailer, no, I'm good.
Well, I appreciate it because I was never going to see it anyway. So now I feel like I've at least saved the time to not watch the movie, the horrible horror movie about pets coming back to life.
Oh,
Yeah, so, you know, you have about 10 minutes of new footage to watch now.
I think I would rather go back and watch the one from the 80s because that I remember less of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the outcome of that movie, whereas this one now I know the exact outcome of it.
Right.
So.
By the way, the one from the 80s, not a great movie.
No, not a great movie. Not a great movie.
So, okay, so on DVD and Blu-ray now. some of the Oscar moves are finally starting to come out right before the awards. So Bohemian Rhapsody, Shoplifters, and At Eternity's Gate are all Oscar movies. But here's the thing, too. For whatever reason, even if they are available, sometimes what the studios are doing are now only making them available for purchase. So you have to spend like $15 to watch one of these movies instead of like a rental. So they're making it like, well, we'll make it more accessible. No, you're not. No, you're not. Not at $15 a pop. That's the kind of defeats the whole purpose of me renting them and watching them before the movies. Yeah, yeah.
It's a fine fine thing. I've done that. I like that.
So then you got to wait like a couple more weeks or whatever they do before then they actually give you the rental price, which is, again, short-term, nonsensical, old-school Hollywood thinking. Like, no, that's not what people want. That's not how we want to consume these movies. We don't necessarily need, you know, to watch it for free on Hulu or Netflix. We'll pay the $5 to actually rent it and watch it, but I'm not going to pay 15.
You have to give people now the ability to consume your content however they want.
Right.
That's what you have to do. If you really, you have to give them the option. Do you want to watch this? I look at smart models. Like, I'm a Cubs fan. I like baseball. I look at Major League Baseball, how they, and a lot of the sports leagues got wise to this. Let me consume so I can watch the Cubs play on my phone, on my laptop. I can watch it through my Apple TV. The games are archived. So like they played last night and I don't know the score and I just want to watch it. I can watch it. They have a 5-minute highlight of the game from last night I get to watch. Let me watch it however I want to watch it, whenever I want to watch it. And when they do this shit, it's just like,
well, that's the Cubs. The Dodgers is the opposite. The Dodgers, you can't even watch it locally. You have to subscribe to a cable station to watch it only.
Right.
And so, and if you have DirecTV, you can't watch it either, and you must pay a certain amount of money, and it's horrible.
If you subscribe to Major League Baseball, the games are all blacked out.
I worked my way around that, but yes, I subscribed to Major League Baseball, and then I also had it. I had this program you buy that disconnects your Apple TV or whatever the box you're using from locations called Unlocator. And so then you can unlocate your box. And now I can watch Dodger home game. Now I'm paying a lot of money to do that. I'm paying a fee to Unlocator. I'm paying a fee to Major League Baseball. I'm paying a lot of money so I can watch the games that I feel like I deserve to watch. But I'm still somehow a criminal.
That's a great point.
So you can watch the games literally that are local.
Right, exactly.
That's a great point because the only time I can't watch the Cubs is when they play the Dodgers once or twice a year.
Yeah.
Or Angels. Mm. Right.
It's crazy. It's lunacy. And it's also driving, like, kids are growing up not seeing baseball because, you know, why? It's ruining
nonsensical business practices.
Yeah. And all you're doing, if
we're trying to grow our audience, maybe the best way to do is to make sure no one can watch it.
And if you do this, like, well, we're the only place you can get it, people will go, okay, I'll go do something else.
Right. Yeah.
I have 10,000 options now.
Right.
Right. That's what most of my girlfriends have said to me. This is where the only place you can get this. And then you go, yeah, well, we'll go someplace else.
Yeah.
But now have we found out?
Have they actually said I have 10,000 options?
Yes.
Yeah.
This $15 to buy it, I'm guessing that we don't know the market research on that. I'm guessing it probably yields a lot of purchases of that $15. Like, I'm guessing it's unfair. Mm-hmm. It's not good, but it might actually
that's
be
a valid point. They might go, look, we drive up sales better if we do this. I find that hard. I don't know. If people really want to see Bohemian Rhapsody, but wouldn't they have already seen it in the theater?
Or you know, whatever. If you would have got a Chinese knockoff of it and want to see a lousy version of it, I'm sure that's available to you too.
Sure.
But if you're just sort of waiting around for it and you want to see it, and $15 is about the price of one ticket in a theater, and you're going to watch it for a bunch of times or at least watch it with a group, you might say, okay, well, it's fair enough for me. But and the rental price, the $4, you have like 24 hours or something to see it.
48
and
then
it
hours.
Disappears. Mm-hmm. Some people just may love Bohemian
they may want to own it,
and want to own it. But
why not? Why not give somebody that choice right away? Well, I want to own it. I want to watch it whenever I want. I'll buy it, and then okay. Well, now I just want to rent it. You know, why do I have to wait? Why are
my
there
guess
separate
is there's
windows?
A lot more people willing to spend $15, even if they only want to see it one time, the first couple of weeks.
There must be.
Must be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think of the people who are like, I'd like to rent it, but I'll spend four, but 15, forget it.
It's like going in a theater. Why see in a theater? Why don't you wait until it's rentable, you know, whatever, the 5 months later till it was rentable at $4. Mm-hmm. Some people want to see it in the theater. People want to have that experience.
Now, I don't know if the $15 making you buy it is going to work with the next film, The Front Runner. So... you know, we said this when this movie came out. I'm like, is this really relevant? You know, the Gary Hart story, when we have all this crazy, the world is burning and it doesn't matter.
Talk
and
about a candidate from the 80s that's been played by an Australian.
Yeah. And it just didn't resonate. People didn't care. People didn't go see it. So, but if you're curious, it's on rental right now. Right. And then nobody's
fooled. Did you guys see Bohemian Rhapsody?
I did.
Did you like it?
I did like it.
I did like it. Mm-hmm.
Would you pay $15 to see it?
I would not. Okay. No, I would pay $5.
Okay.
I would pay $15 to see it in the theater because I thought it was a big...
Yeah.
Especially the concert scenes.
Yeah. I would want to see that in a theater. But it's like, if you're telling me... It's like, I'm not going to pay $15 to see an Avengers movie at home.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'll pay it for the...
Right.
The big screen.
Right. And didn't bother you that the historically inaccurate as well? The Bohemian Rhapsody.
It didn't because I knew there was
just good Hollywood fun.
Yeah, I knew there was
sure
the Hollywood rewrites and polish.
Yeah,
it bothered me more that there was a sexual predator directed half of it. So.
I concur. Right.
And then you're gonna have to throw away about 90% of all Hollywood movies.
Yeah,
and just figure that out.
So okay, and then the last movie was Nobody's Fool, which is the Tiffany Haddish film. So we have to get her back on the show too.
We haven't heard her on forever. Yeah. She's a little busy.
Yeah, she's got a lot going on. Yeah, maybe she could find.
Text her last year to be on the app with that TV show I was directing, and she responded and said, "Hey, thanks for thinking of me. I'm just too busy right now." So I was like, "Well, we'll get, you know." Mm-hmm. So I'll reach out, and she's not going to be able to do
right. That's understandable. All right.
I'm available, guys, all the time. Anytime you need me, I'm available all the time.
So, like when Jay and I go in and pitch shows, and I say, hey, you know, we have 4 Emmys between us. Okay. And then Jay just goes, well, you know, I have 4 Emmys.
Yeah, still between us.
Yeah,
between the two of us. Yeah, exactly.
So,
ladies, you say we have 4 Emmys and a podcast.
You're right. Between the two of us. on the site spotlight and the fan feedback, like we said, we're getting the message boards up and going. Please check those out and please participate. We want to get those discussions up and running. And you guys are slowly coming back. We appreciate that for sure. And like I said, we're going to be redoing some Patreon stuff. So let us know if there's something we're missing or that you want more content. We want to get more of you guys into being members. So we're revamping that. Valentine's Day is coming up. We're doing a special promotion, 30% off everything in the store, but only until Valentine's Day. So that just 2 days. It's a very kind of special secret flash sale. And the code is IHEARTCFN. Spell out heart, IHEARTCFN. And that will give you 30% off anything in the store.
Yep. So it ends at midnight on the 14th.
Yes. So, all right.
We ship all over the world.
Mm-hmm. We do indeed. And premiering this week, Alita Battle Angel. And, this, you know, I got to tell you, it's weird. Like, you know, James Cameron is one of the most successful filmmakers of our time, by far, box office. And even, you know, you could say innovative-wise, he is. And in between Terminator, Titanic, and Avatar movies, he picks some odd things. And this is one of them. Like Alita Battle Angel, it has this weird look to it, and it just feels like it was one of those movies that was sitting on a shelf for a while that they finally released.
Watched trailers for it for a year. They pushed back the release date. So I just saw a trailer for it ahead of the movie. When I went and saw Cold Pursuit, and I was like, man, I don't know. This could be. I want it to be cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna say like most
visually
movies,
it looks interesting.
Most movies that are pushed back. And back and back. Well, that's trouble, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to James Cameron, that doesn't necessarily mean trouble. It may just mean that I decided I want to do 4 more things.
And
I want to spend $40 million more, and everybody's going, well, that's a we don't want you to, James. I'm going to.
Yeah.
Done. And that's how it happens.
I want to shoot this scene at the bottom of the ocean.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet.
As a pickup shot? Yes.
Yes.
I'm willing to put down money that it's good.
All right.
I have nothing about it other than James Cameron, and I've seen the posters, and I'm just going to say that it's probably good.
And it is a we will say this, it is a beloved IP. People love the IP.
I know nothing about the IP.
Yes. And
I'm putting JK in a check mark next to me.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we can put down a bet between us.
Yeah.
I'll just take your word for it. If you decide it's good or bad, I will pay you.
Gentlemen,
the money.
We're all gentlemen here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. But I'm guessing I'm going to think it's good too. I'm thinking.
That's what all popped right. into my mind when I, because we've talked about it on the show numerous times. I've seen the trailer a dozen times ahead of various movies. And when I saw it, I went and saw Cold Pursuit yesterday, mm-hmm. and the highlight of Cold Pursuit was watching this trailer. So I went, I kind of feel like you, Jay. Like, I was like, all right, you know what?
I think it's going to have that Cameron polish on the effects. I think it's going to visually, it's going to be stunning, but I think the movie is going to be bad.
It might. I mean, a February release is also not a great sign.
No.
But
again, but Jay, you bring up a good point about him. He can just say, no, I want to do...
I know.
James, it never works if you release that.
Right.
I don't care.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm doing it this
care.
Way.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, I have a little faith. So mm-hmm. I will see.
All right.
Yeah. All right. And isn't it romantic? This is the parody of rom-coms.
Looks like it could
Rebel
be
Wilson.
Funny. The trailer looks funny.
What's weird is like this whole release date and then Fighting With My Family, which is the WWE movie about this family who always wanted to be wrestlers and then got The Rock is in it. It's kind of like when he was at his heyday of being a wrestler. I feel like all of these movies are coming out 20 years too late. Like, yeah, we get it. Rom-coms are ridiculous and the gay best friend and all those things. I'm like, but we've kind of moved beyond how ridiculous they are already. I don't know if we need it pointed out.
I don't know.
But, you know, Stephen Merchant directs Fighting With My Family, who is a great comedian and writer from, mm-hmm. you know, he co-created The Office with Ricky Gervais.
And he's in
and,
it.
And he's in it. Yeah, yeah, he plays one of the dads. And he actually, they said remember that kids movie, The Tooth Fairy, mm-hmm, The Rock,
sure.
and which was actually a funny kids movie, which was one of those movies you're like, well, there's no way this is going to be good or funny at all. And it was. It was a funny, fun kids movie. So they got together and wanted to make this movie. And, you know, the trailer looks good and funny, and it's I don't know. I feel like all of these movies could go either way. like we're seeing trailers, but we're not seeing, like, you know, what these movies really are, I think. So I don't know. I think if I had to pick, Alita: Battle Angel, not good. Isn't It Romantic? Will just feel like blah. And I think Fighting With My Family might be good. So that's I'm going on three of them. I'm going to go Fighting With My Family, probably the best one. And of course, Happy Death Day to You, a sequel to Happy Death Day. If you liked the first one, you're probably not listening to this podcast. So and then you will be going to see the second one.
All right.
Yeah.
All there right. it is.
That's it.
Lock
yeah, that's
it down.
Laid out for you guys. Yeah, that's your movie roadmap.
Your week is planned out.
Yes.
Use the iHeart CFN for 30% off, and then go. Which one of these movies this week are you going to like see and really enjoy?
Yeah, let us know.
Let us know.
So, so Jay, yes. Where can people find you online? And I know you've got some things coming up, including you worked on the new Zombieland movie,
Zombieland
and
your
son has a performance coming
that
up.
That is really what I'm most excited to talk about. My son, those of you who live in Los Angeles and are around February 24th, the weekend of February 24th, my son, who is a unbelievable singer, and if you want to, his name is Charlie Kogan, C-H-R-L-I-E, Charlie, and Kogan is K-O-G-E-N. And if you want to go to YouTube and just type in Charlie Kogan Young Arts, Young Arts, which is a foundation, you can see a video of him playing one of his songs that he'll be playing this coming February 24th at the Mint.
Oh, nice. Mint's a great venue.
The Mint's a great venue. An afternoon show. It'll be very fun and very free and easy. And we're just
family friendly.
Family friendly. So come to the Mint and you can buy your tickets at, I think, themintla.com. And it's like $20 a shot to come. And then it costs more if you just show up at the door. But anyway, come, have a good time, enjoy this concert, and if you...
Is there a VIP ticket where you get a CD, too?
No. No, you get Dana Gould merchandise if you come, which will be good. No, I mean, I will... I will talk to anybody, any listener of the show who wants to come. I'll talk to them, tell them about Simpsons, the history of the Simpsons, Frasier, Zombieland 2. I'll give you away secrets that I can't say here on the radio. No, you should definitely come to that. That's the most exciting thing. We're trying to sort of make sure that the house is full for this this event, and it'll be great.
Outstanding.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So what am I doing? I helped rewrite on this Zombieland 2, which was going to be really fun. The guys who wrote Deadpool also wrote the first Zombieland and also wrote Zombieland 2. Really funny script. And a bunch of us helped punch up jokes, and it was just really fun, a fun couple of days. And I loved it. I'm also writing a bunch of pilots, and I'm working on a pilot with Chris here.
Yes.
Things that you guys can't possibly know about or possibly care about because you don't know what it is. But behind the scenes, man, TV is rocking.
Yeah.
I will say this, that selling comedies are no longer comedies. You have to sort of be selling dramas and make them feel like comedies after you sell them. But nobody just wants to buy a straight up comedy anymore. Oh. People want to buy comedies that have really dramatic elements to it.
Okay.
Make it feel gritty and edgy. The bleeding edge is a term you like to use.
So yes. Chris is a snowplow driver who's pushed past the brink.
Oh, yes. Beyond the brink. Yes. He starts off murdering on the snowplow and then goes from there.
Then it goes off the rails there.
Yeah.
It's like, and he's a snowplow driver in Florida.
Wow. So. That's what pushed him to the edge.
I'm going to make it work.
There's no snow here.
Shut up.
Yeah.
One man.
You don't know.
Yeah. And I also can be seen every 3 minutes at Disneyland on the Soarin' Over California ride.
Yes.
Or Soarin' Over the World now.
That.
So, yeah. I'm in the pre-ride movie.
Yeah, Jay's in the queue.
I'm in the queue
movie.
So, if you want to get a really good look at me, go to the pre-ride movie at the Soarin' Over California, and you'll see me taking my mouse ears off and looking ashamed.
Yes.
Every few minutes.
Now, I got
to
ask.
That is worth a trip to
Disney
just for that.
Was the director shooting and called you for that? Like, how do you get a pre-ride cube
That's
movie?
Exactly it. The director, my friend John Turteltaub, who I've known for many years, a very good director, and has directed the While You Were Sleeping and National Treasure movies and what have you, was directing, working for Disney. They sort of forced him to do something for them, and then he forced me to come down. And
That's how Hollywood works.
My rule as an actor, and I love acting, and I've always loved acting, is I will do anything. If you don't make me audition, I don't care how degrading, how demeaning. I will bring my own clothes. I will show up on time. I'll know my lines. I don't care what it is. It's like, you're going to blow this pig, and then they're going to shoot you in the head. Great. When can I be there?
I love it. Yeah. I'll bring my own lunch.
Exactly. I'll be fine. And I will be pleasant on the set, all that stuff. Just give me the role. And so John just said, you're going to be this. You're going to do something on the. I didn't even know what it was. Just come on down. I came on down, and he asked me to be a guy who's wearing something on his head that needs to be taken off before the ride starts.
And looks ashamed.
Looks ashamed.
I love your inner monologue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was saying, I feel terrible about it. I feel sad. I get a laugh. I get a laugh. I do say in the ride, I do get a laugh. And I've been to the ride, and my nieces and nephews try to make a big deal about it. Like, he's in the movie. And like, nobody cares.
I'm amazed that John Turteltaub directed this. That's just directing these ride safety videos.
Well, if you work for a giant studio and they say, you know, we're paying you gazillions of dollars, do this for us. Sometimes, you know, for an afternoon, you just go do it.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'll do it. I would love to do that and call my friends and go, I'm going to need you to show up and be a show.
Yeah, I would do it. I would absolutely direct
it.
And
you get an extra fast pass.
Yeah.
I'm in. Well, if John Turteltaub needs Chris or I to show up and be ashamed on something that he's directing.
I will find it. I don't know if he's doing it anymore now since he's been working for the Chinese on the Meg or something like that. I don't know that he needs Disney anymore.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's our show, guys. I'm headlining a bunch of clubs in Chicago next week at all the different Zanies, St. Charles downtown and Rosemont February 21st through March 2nd. And then, of course, Ron Placone and I are doing the Progressive Comedy Tour March 10th through the 13th. We're going to Lafayette, Louisiana, Oxford, Mississippi, Pensacola, Florida, and New Orleans. Go to grahamelwood.com for all the tour dates.
And my graphic novel, Long Ago and Far Away, is available at the Comedy Film Nerd store and soon to be available digitally at Starburns, Dan Harmon's company, and also Conversations from the Abyss. The second season is now dropping. You could hear Graham Elwood and Rick Overton do The Operative, which is about a president who talks to a political operative, and then it goes
off the rails.
Which one's
from
the president?
There.
Which one's the president?
Rick Overton.
Okay.
Right. I'm the creepy.
And the new episode called My Friend will be dropping February 15th about a girl who talks to her imaginary friend, and the imaginary friend may not be so imaginary. That stars Michael Carnaccia as the imaginary friend and my daughter, Isabella, as the middle schooler. So, and that's what we got going on right now.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you to Jay for showing up today. And thank you to Aaron Brungard and everybody over at All Things Comedy. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first.